The internet has made it pretty clear that cats are its favorite animal. There's a treasure trove of online videos of cats running, hunting, catching, eating, sleeping, and more. And even though they're one of the most commonly owned and observed pets, cat behaviors still are often a mystery.
Our next guest says we can get along better with our cats by understanding their evolution and their nature. He's a cat behavior expert and the host of the Animal Planet show My Cat from Hell and a new show called Cat vs. Dog.
Jackson Galaxy is with us now. He's here to talk about his new book, Total Cat Mojo, The Ultimate Guide to Life with Your Cat. Jackson, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, when it comes to cats, Jackson, what is mojo?
Well, it's the same as when it comes to humans. It's sort of this inner confidence, this thing that just sort of bubbles up from inside of us and makes it so that we don't have to posture, we don't have to, you know, bow up and show everybody how tough we are, how cool we are. It's just sort of a natural state of you know, knowledge that you're home. You're at home with yourself. And I think that all cats have that equal source of mojo, and that's, you know, contact with their ancestor, the one that I call the raw cat. And if they can tap into that cat, then they're going to be a lot more, you know, mojo-fied.
And you use the phrase raw cat. Can you delve a little deeper into what you mean by that?
Well, the raw cat, what I mean by that is that there is a very straight line in an evolutionary sense between the cat that sits in your lap and the cat roaming the Fertile Crescent tens of thousands of years ago. Behaviorally, physically, they're very much the same. We haven't monkeyed with them in the way that we have done with dogs. We haven't asked them to do anything and then bred those characteristics into them. We left them alone to do their job, and their job was to hunt and catch and kill. And that was it. Keep our food supply safe. And then they just went along for the ride for those tens of thousands of years. It really wasn't until the last maybe 120, 130 years that we've brought them into our houses and then immediately started making dog-like demands on them. And that's when things started to change. But the raw cat is that ancestor that your cat has inside them.
And you say that we make a mistake when we treat cats, we think of cats too much like dogs, when we apply dog lessons to cats. How do we go wrong?
Well, that's where we go wrong. Other than the fact that they have four legs and fur, they're completely different animals. As a matter of fact, I don't really consider cats domesticated. I mean, maybe now, at this point in their development and their sort of evolution with us, they're starting to become more, you know, doggish, for lack of a better word. But, you know, when we ask cats to show us behaviors, to show us, you know, a dependence upon us that we have bred into dogs, I mean, it's unfair to them. And it is one of the reasons why we project so much nonsense onto them, because we don't recognize the facial expressions and the communicative gestures and everything. And because of that, we judge them, we blame them, and we give them blame for all kinds of things. It's kind of crazy.
So while they might not be like dogs, we have had them in our homes for quite a while at this point. Maybe you can't really answer this, but why wasn't the domestication similar in many ways to that of a dog?
Because, you know, like I said, it's only been, I mean, that 120 years in an evolutionary sense is a blip. It's a drop of water. I mean, it's nothing. Dogs, literally, we took them out of the wild over 10,000 years ago and immediately started saying, all right, you're going to do this job for me. You're going to do all of these jobs for me, and you're going to like it. In fact, you're going to be my best friend, and you're going to do this, and you're going to wag your tail. You're going to do all these things that I recognize so that I can get on board with who you are. And over, that's you know, I'm shortcutting it, but that's, you know, those all of those years of breeding in those characteristics. As a matter of fact, it's really funny. There's some stuff that we bred into them that we didn't even know we were doing, like eyebrows. We bred eyebrows into dogs so that when they give us a baleful look, we know exactly what that means, right? We just didn't need to do that with cats because we didn't have that relationship. They were working members of the family. They lived on the farm. They took care of the mice, and that was it. And just now, we're completing that transition of cats in homes, in apartments, in houses, where, you know, just a century or two ago, that wasn't the case. So it takes a long time for genetics to get reprogrammed.
We're talking to Jackson Galaxy. His new book is Total, Cat Mojo, The Ultimate Guide to Life with Your Cat. And Jackson, a lot of your book and your work takes those lessons you were just talking about them and helps people apply them for what they see as troublesome or nuisance cat behaviors. We'll get into some particulars. I'm sure our listeners will have some. But talk about how you use that knowledge of the cat's nature as a tool to overcome what we see as difficulties with our cats.
Well, you know, I think one of the first things that we have to come to grips with is we took this wild animal, brought them into our homes, and then got mad at them for not peeing and pooping in a box. You know, it's one of those weird moments where we made demands that were against their nature. A cat's nature is to go around the perimeter of their entire territory and market with their pee and their poop. And for them to go in the same place every day, every time, is not horribly reasonable, you know. So one of the biggest arguments I get with my clients is when I ask them, plead with them, to add more litter boxes in their house, and they just don't want it. You know, people don't want more litter boxes. But if we start shifting our way of thinking and remembering the closeness of proximity between the raw cat and your cat, we'll start to provide more that would give them that territorial sense of security, which all cats need, that sense of ownership. So, you know, I can't count how many homes I've gone into where you just don't even know that a cat lives there. There's no trees, there's no beds, there's no litter boxes, there's no places that I would call signposts where cats soak their scent into it and it gives them a sense of mojo, a sense of belonging.
And we actually had a listener email us, Leah. She says that she has a cat that pees on her couch. She thinks that her cat has separation anxiety, and she is, quote, at her wit's end. That was an email. And, of course, if you want to email us, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. So there are a couple of things there. One, which is kind of what you were talking about, that, you know, cats might be marking in different places, but also some anxiety or some irritation on the part of the owner. How do we reconcile those?
Well, and that hopefully is what the book is about. I mean, this was my chance to sort of put everything I know about these guys into one place. But beyond that, it's about empowering you, not just with the tools, but with a better sense of your relationship with them. So, for instance, if this person is saying it's separation anxiety, where is she getting that information? What has she deduced from her life with her cat and the changes that have gone on in their environment and when it started and why it started on that spot and all that. You know, it's that which is the thing that makes it impossible for me to help folks just, you know, when they write an email, but I want them to be their own best detective and to give them the tools that I would give you if I walked into your house, you know, and hopefully, you know, that's what the book provides.
Thanks a lot for that email, Leah. And Jackson, one thing we shouldn't do, you say, you want to ban the bottle. Stop people using the spray bottle to keep the cat from doing whatever behavior, climbing on the counter it's not supposed to.
Right, right. The idea is, and it's very much like, I mean, we have to start thinking about, in our relationship with our cat, what is a reasonable thing to do. You know, the example that I use in the book is that if you woke up one morning and your child had taken a whole box of crayons to the walls in the house, sure, you can get upset, but you have a choice to make. Either you punish and that's it, which is not very constructive, or you say no, you can't do this, but then you provide an easel, then you provide paper, you provide a place for that creativity or whatever to have an outlet. With cats, we are telling them not to do something and not giving them an alternative. So you always want to have a yes behind the no. If you want them to not go on the countertop, sure, you could put something that's kind of sticky up there or any number of deterrents that are sold on the market and say no to the cat. But then you have to ask yourself, why did they want to go up there in the first place? What is it about that spot? A lot of the countertop thing is we keep food up there, then we say to them, no, you can't go up there where the food is. And the other thing is, because it's a very socially significant area, we should give them a yes. We should give them a perch near that location where they can get up, observe the family during socially important times, and be a part of it without just saying no. Now, the spray bottle is that ultimate expression of frustration. What I don't think folks realize is that every time you spritz that thing, number one, you're not doing anything, because unless you spritz them every single time they do that behavior, you're not accomplishing anything from a training perspective. And number two, because your hand is attached to that bottle, you are breaking down the bond between you and your cat. You're making them afraid of you, not the bottle itself. And, you know, so there's many better ways to do that. And, again, I provide, hopefully, that kind of knowledge in the book.
We're talking to Jackson Galaxy right now. He is a cat behavior expert and the host of Animal Planet's show My Cat from Hell and the more recent show Cat vs. Dog. He's talking with us about his new book, Total Cat Mojo, The Ultimate Guide to Life with Your Cat.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about cat behavior? Maybe you're trying to understand your cat, make sense of why your cat behaves the way it does, makes a particular noise or other behavior. Maybe you have a question about feeding them, training them. Maybe you've got that nuisance behavior that Jackson might be able to point you in the right direction on. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Jackson Galaxy. His new book is Total Cat Mojo, The Ultimate Guide to Life with Your Cat.
Call in with your questions and experiences at 800-642-1234. Do you see some of these common misconceptions about cats? Are there any common cat behaviors that you're still trying to make sense of? And do you want to know how to give your cat a better environment? Call or share your thoughts now at 800-642-1234. Again, that is 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Right to your calls now. Jack is with us in Eau Claire. Jack, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to ask, Jack?
Well, I have a cat that we've had for a couple of years, and we just recently adopted a dog, and the dog has kind of taken over the house. Our cat lives in our bedroom, and there's a baby gate, so the cat has a safe space. And I'm just wondering how we can make the cat feel more comfortable to be around the dog and out in the rest of the house as well.
Jack, thanks. Dogs and cats living together. Jackson, the subject of your new show, I think, Cat versus Dog.
Yeah.
What do you suggest for Jack?
Well, I mean, and again, I haven't seen what's going on in his house, but from a general perspective, I think what we tend to do is, I think, and I'm not saying this from a cat biased position. I love dogs. I have dogs. That said, I think we cut dogs a little bit too much slack. And let's face it, if the dog can't do a protracted sit and stay, especially when a cat is walking across the room, and I don't care if there is a baby gate, if the dog sees the cat and just immediately goes towards, and the cat knows that they're, you know, not safe, then we've got a problem. I mean, really, it's about doubling down on your training, making sure that your dog can predictably hold still when the cat is walking across the room so that the cat doesn't immediately see the dog as a threat. And I think that's really important. And if you don't have that level of obedience, just make sure that in those first few weeks that they're meeting each other, that your dog is always on a leash. Because, again, you know, a cat is a prey animal, so they are programmed to have their head on a swivel and to be able to, you know, differentiate between friend and foe in a heartbeat. And if your dog is moving forward towards your cat always, then they're going to say foe, you know.
And we're going to go now to Sam in Janesville. Hi, Sam.
Hi. So my question is about how cats see their owner. I've heard that they see them as either a big cat or some other large animal, but not necessarily revere them as their owner. And then secondary question following that up is if you die and pass away and your cat is in the house, because it doesn't respect you as an owner, it won't just lay down by your side and pass away with you. It'll start to consume you. Have you heard about this? Is this more than just a fun fact in a bar that's not really true?
Sam, thank you so much for that call. So, Jackson, we've got two questions here. One, but they're really about the perception of humans in relation to cats. First, how do cats actually think of us?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for every single one of them. You know? I mean, there are a lot of cats that are more attached to human than to territory. The majority are attached to the territory, with the humans being a very, very important part of that territory. And of course, you know, all animals can bond with other animals, you know, and we've seen proof of that. It's the hottest thing on the internet right now is, like, you know, a sheep and a duck have become best friends, that kind of thing. We've seen plenty of that's a, you know, that is a given. But we are right now, that question touches on so many different stereotypes, you know, and as you can see, it's also fed through dog-colored glasses, right? Because that whole, well, he won't just lie down next to you and die with you. I don't know dogs that'll do that. I think what will happen with your dog, if they're, I mean, not to be the Grim Reaper here, but, you know, if you're in a house alone and your dog is there with you and you die, sorry, the dog's going to eat you. In about 2 or 3 days' time, when there's no food, that's what the dog's going to do, and the cat's going to do the same thing. I know it's grotesque, but that was the question.
That was
know?
The question.
It's
so.
Not a matter of loyalty; it's a matter of survival. You know, so we got to just get our heads away from that, because cats don't act like Lassie, that they're not capable of expressing love. And again, I go through a lot of different body language in the book, trying to explain to you what trust looks like. So, for instance, I teach people about the concept of the slow blink, that if you do this slow blink with a cat, oftentimes, in fact, most times, if you do it enough, they start blinking back at you. It's this amazing technique that I've used with strange cats, you know, that it's a way of establishing trust between us. Now, you take a prey animal like a cat, and you ask them to close their eyes to a potential death threat, you know, and they do. That's saying, I love you, I trust you, I know that you're not going to try to kill me. This is the raw cat speaking through yours and showing you vulnerability. And for a cat to show anyone vulnerability, that's ultimate trust, you know. So these are the things we need to start looking at, and not just the wagging tail.
Sam, thanks for that call. We're talking to Jackson Galaxy. His new book is Total Cat Mojo, The Ultimate Guide to Life with Your Cat. Back to your calls now. Tammy is on the line in Madison. Tammy, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to ask the author what his thoughts were on cat fencing. My personal experience, we already had a 6-foot fence. You can do it to a wood fence or a chain link fence. It was $300, a day's worth of work. I have very happy, healthy cats that go in and outside at will through a pet door. I've never had them escape. And I just struggle to keep a cat inside, you know, every day of its life. So I just kind of wanted your thoughts on that.
Well, we've actually, I mean, we've done at least one episode per season where we've offered up cat fencing as a solution to what was going on in the home. I mean, there's some great companies out there. The fencing that the caller's describing is a fence that comes up off of the top of your existing fence and comes out at about a 45-degree angle, so that when a cat goes to jump over it, oftentimes they'll just take a look up and realize they can't do it. But that part of the fence also sort of comes down almost like a dunk tank. So if they try to grab onto the top, it just dumps them back. It also serves the purpose of keeping other cats out of your yard as well, which is equally important. And I think it's an amazing solution. I think that, you know, I think that there's a mistaken perception that I say that cats should only be indoors at all times, and that's the only way they should live their life. I think that the caller's right. In a perfect world, cats need to go outside. They thrive on the challenges that nature provides them. That said, if we don't provide them with cat fencing, or what I call the catio, sort of a screened-in porch that they can go in, then these are cats that will live statistically half as long as an indoor-only cat. And that leaves you making a really difficult decision. So the solution is, hey, if you can do the fencing, amazing. Take your cat out for walks on a harness, amazing. Catio, amazing. Otherwise, keep them inside and make a incredibly enriched world for them, both sort of from a design perspective and a play perspective, and they'll be very happy.
Tammy, thank you so much for that call. And I do think that one of the questions that does come up a lot is that indoor versus outdoor. And, you know, as you've been looking at this, the raw versus the cat with mojo, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but how can we, in the indoor world or the outdoor world, make our cats the best cats that they can be?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it is. It's going to be an ongoing debate forever, you know, and especially as we further urbanize our life with cats. But, you know, it's not the most responsible thing to do in this day and age to just let your cat outside. And, you know, there's a lot of things out there that will kill them, you know, and we know that. But indoors, you know, I've written two entire books about designing a world inside your house that works for you and for your cats as well, where they get to explore the vertical world a little bit more, where they get to explore under things in a creative way, where they get to let out their little hunter in ways that just include stalking, where we have cat TV, where we put bird feeders outside the window so they can watch that way. And then it all comes down to play. And, you know, daily play, interactive play rituals with your cat, I think is the most important component to bringing out the mojo, the most important. If you have a dog, you have a leash and a collar, and you go for walks. If you have a cat, you have interactive toys where they hunt it, and you act like an idiot by running around the house and pretending to be a bird, pretending to be a worm, or whatever it is, investing into that, allowing their hunter to come out. The difference is day and night, and that, to me, is a way that we can reconcile the indoor and the outdoor.
Jackson, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
We've been talking to Jackson Galaxy. He's a cat behaviorist and host of Animal Planet's show, My Cat from Hell. Also, the new show, Cat vs. Dog. And a new show, that's the one I just mentioned, Cat vs. Dog, that just premiered. We've been talking about his new book, Total Cat Mojo, The Ultimate Guide to Life with Your Cat.